I'm Chris Reback. This is Political Wire Conversations. Today's show is brought to you by HBO's new series, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which takes a comedic look back at the weekend news. It's just like the nightly news, only weeklier. So make sure you tune into the series premiere Sunday, April 27th at 11 p.m., 10 p.m. Central, only on HBO. Now to our conversation. Jeff Guerin has served as one of the most prominent Democratic pollsters of our generation. As president of Hart Research Associates, Guerin has led research for nearly every leading policy, healthcare, education group in the world, including the United Nations and my alma mater, the University of California. He's also polled for candidates at virtually every level of government, including serving as chief strategist for Hillary Clinton in 2008. Today, midterms are heating up. New polls show the fight for Senate control is close to a toss-up. The South remains up for grabs. And if most Democrats are waiting to hear whether Hillary will run in 2016, new questions around whether that's the right strategy. Few know more about designing and executing political strategy than Jeff Guerin. Jeff, thanks for joining me. Now, in researching for this conversation, I happened to see where Senator Chuck Schumer called you, quote, the straightest shooter. He doesn't try to shift the numbers or slant the numbers to buttress his argument. You're the professional, but with all humility, I think you might be doing your job wrong.
Well, you know, I've been doing this for a very long time. I came to Hart Research in 1978, and there is some short-term benefit to telling people what they'd like to hear, but over the long term, I've found that people respect honesty and integrity in research even more, and you know, we care very much about the value of honest research, and you know, the truth is we're in the business of helping campaigns win elections, and they're best able to do that when they are acting on accurate information, even if that information can be daunting at times. That good strategy is based on accurate insights.
Let me ask you about that. I mean, obviously, I was teasing, but how hard is that? I mean, so many of us hear how politicians, oftentimes when things go wrong for them, it's because the people around them kind of just couldn't, you know, give them the straight information, or maybe were caught up in telling the leader what he or she, what they believed he or she wanted to hear. I mean, does it help that you are, quote, independent? That, I mean, they're your client, but you're not, you know, on, you know, you're not technically full-time on.
Well, it's not so much that. I think that I think my client, in many cases, I have long-standing relationships with my clients. They know that I care about them and their success in their politically and personally. I think, you know, one advantage is that having been around for a while and being a little older, I know that at the end of the day, candidates are not just better off when they hear the cold hard facts, but they know they're better off. And sometimes when you're young and first in, you know, getting involved in this, you're a little fearful of having to be the bearer of bad tidings.
Yep.
And very often that fear is not really justified. You know, it's easier for the moment from a kind of a morale perspective not to have to deal with a candidate who, you know, becomes too downbeat. And it's something, you know, I think about, you know, morale as a consideration in what I do.
What's the hardest thing you've ever had to tell a candidate?
Well, you know, you know, frequently, I think you tell candidates that they're not going to win, or people who want to, you know, sometimes that happens even before they become candidates, people who are, you know, eager to run for a particular office, and that you have to tell them that it's probably not in the cards. And
I mean, you can just see that sometimes you're doing the polling, you see the numbers, you're doing the math, thinking through the various strategies, looking at the constituency groups, and you're just like, oh no, this isn't going to happen. I mean, has that occurred?
Yes, that it's often knowable.
They know it
early on, and you know that you know, at the end of the day, we're paid to tell candidates not what they want to know, but what they need to know, and in the long term, I think they appreciate that.
Well, they surely do. I mean, you've done it for a while. You don't last in any business since 1978, or you know, I guess that was just when you were at the current location.
Truth is, I haven't been able to find another job.
Okay. Well, you know, with the internet, I mean, there are job boards all over the place. So I'll send you some links afterwards if that's if that's really what you're needing. I somehow doubt that it is. So you were chief strategist for Hillary for president in 2008. I find that very interesting.
In terms of that title, as people know, Mark Penn was the chief strategist for the Clinton campaign, and for a variety of reasons, he needed to step aside from that position.
Yep.
When I did not embrace that title, in fact, I shared it with Howard Wolfson. And, I really felt my role was really coordinating a very smart team of people. And I hope I made a contribution to the campaign. I kind of helped her snatch defeat from the jaws of defeat, but
but
in a way where I think by the end of the campaign, voters had a much clearer and better insight about what makes Hillary Clinton such a incredible and special leader. I think the kind of important function there was really getting people to work together and be on the same page and pulling in the same direction.
Understood. And let the record show that I was the one who called you that. You didn't call yourself that, nor did you tell me to. And you know, if it turns out after this, Wolfson's mad at you, you know, have him give me a call,
yeah,
please. So
he'd be mad at me for something else. So.
Okay, so you can't win regardless. Good. I'm glad I didn't cause the problem. Along the lines of trying to cause problems, any chance I can trick you into admitting you've been hired for 2016?
No chance at all. I think that before you get hired for something, there has to be a candidate, and I think it is, what you see is what the reality is that Secretary Clinton, I think, is focused on getting her book out the door. She is thinking through this decision. It's obviously a kind of a very important decision, certainly for the country, but for her in a very personal way. And I think she's, I have no direct knowledge, but I think she is, still working through all of that.
And what's your view? I mean, when you look at numbers, when you look at trends, I mean, you keep your finger and your company keeps its finger, on the pulse of so many issues and so many aspects of what's going on in our country, education, healthcare, the list goes on. As you sense where we are as a country, should she? I mean, does she, are the times right? Would you advise to her that she should? I mean, again, with humility, if she were to take your advice, but what's your view just based on where you see the country at?
Well, I think that, again, there are lots of personal factors, but I have no doubt in my own mind that the moment is right and ripe for Secretary Clinton if she decides to run, that there is a really good fit between what she would offer as a candidate and as a presidential leader and what the country is hungry for at the moment. And I think that she is in a much stronger position now than she in that regard than when she last ran in 2007, 2008.
Is that incredible to you on some level, or surprising, or amazing? I mean, she really has, as an outsider, I mean, you know her, I don't know her, but as an outsider, I mean, that time as Secretary of State does seem to have evolved the view of her as a leader. I mean, she was already an incredible leader, and it has evolved the view of her as a leader and what leadership means in a way. I mean, she's gotten bipartisan support on that front. I mean, obviously, still plenty of people who, certainly plenty of Republicans who still are not in favor of her, of course. But did that, were you surprised in any way? Or, you know, what's your sense of the view of her since she did serve the country in that role?
Well, I think you're right in your observation about how impactful and transformational that experience has been in the way people think about Hillary Clinton. What people, voters recall about that is that, first, how incredibly hardworking and energetic she was on behalf of the United States and American interests, that what a strong advocate she was for America and its values, and I think people particularly admire her role as a voice for the rights of women and girls as part of her service as secretary and now in her work for the Clinton Foundation.
And as someone who has worked not just with Hillary Clinton, but with so many Democrats, and you know, I would assume, you tell me if I'm wrong, but you know, a strong believer in the Democratic Party. I mean, I assume you are. You've spent, you know, so many years.
More than ever.
Yeah. Okay. So I just didn't want to be presumptuous on that, but I certainly assume so.
I started out in life working for a Republican. My first boss was John Hines, a Republican congressman and senator from Pennsylvania. But there are no Republicans like that any longer.
I was going to say, would you work for him again?
And I think somebody like that. But the sad truth is that the Republican Party has become an extreme and narrow-minded party by and large, I think driven entirely by catering to very wealthy elites and to a very conservative Tea Party base.
Certainly that on the Republican side, that tension between the Tea Party and the so-called establishment is certainly going to be one of their major issues. I'd be interested as we talk more if you're seeing anything on that. But just to close out on the Hillary question, given your belief in the Democratic Party and the fact you've worked for so many Democrats, do you have any concern that Democrats might be putting all their eggs in the Hillary basket? I mean, what if she doesn't run? And do you have any sense? I've started to read a little bit about this. Some questions of whether is she running a little bit of right. Well, running's a wrong word because she's not running. But is there a little bit of a sense of the inevitability campaign right now, which is what we saw a little bit in 2008. And do you just have any concern that Democrats might be putting all their eggs in the Hillary basket?
I don't. That the closest analog is what occurred in 1991 when Democrats waited a very long time for Mario Cuomo to make a decision about his candidacy.
Yes.
He was the presumed front runner, perhaps not quite at the level that Secretary Clinton is, but at a very significant level. And, he made his decision rather late before, other candidates really had a chance to establish their own identities, and people were wringing their hands over that at the time. But the truth is, we had a good group of candidates, including a fellow named Bill Clinton. And they kind of emerged in due course, and we had a good primary process. So I think some respects the voters would be relieved if the process were a little shorter this time around.
Yeah, well, it certainly can go on for quite a while.
I don't think that kind of the the excitement that this is really not about inevitability. I think there's really an excitement. There's a reason that people are ready for Hillary. It's a well-named organization. They're excited not because she's inevitable, but because of her leadership and what people think she can, what she would mean to the country and do for the country. If she runs, my guess is that that's what her candidacy will be about.
Yeah. Well, they certainly, the Ready for Hillary group has certainly raised, there's some backing there. I mean, they've raised quite a bit of money. I think I read somewhere in the $4 million range.
Yeah, people are really, really excited about the idea of Hillary Clinton running for president.
I want to ask you as well about the sentiment towards our current president. I'd like to ask you very quickly about midterms 2014. But first, I want to share a couple of words with our audience about our terrific sponsor, HBO's new series, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, which takes a comedic look back at the week in news. In these fast-paced times, you need a show that will wrap it all up for you. For example, if the government collapses on a Monday, John will cover it on Sunday. If the stock market crashes on a Wednesday again, he'll cover it on Sunday. Last Week Tonight with John Oliver is just like the nightly news, only weeklier. So make sure you tune in to the series premiere Sunday, April 27th at 11 p.m., 10 p.m. Central, only on HBO. Jeff, I also want to ask you about midterms 2014. Obviously, the big issue right now, the fight for Senate control. Can Democrats keep control of the Senate, do you feel?
Sure they can. I think we have a real fight on our hands, and there's no question that in a lot of respects, the playing field is tilted to the advantage of the Republicans. But I have no doubt that the Democrats have the potential to hold on to the Senate. It's a very different election than the one in 2010, where if memory serves, was not a very good one for Democrats. It's different in this respect because in 2010, the Republican brand had no content to it, and really, at the end of the day, not a particularly important factor in voters' decision making. It was really kind of people took virtually 100% of their frustrations out on President Obama and the Democrats. In 2014, I think there's still a lot of frustrations. Democrats have to recognize the reality of that. But now that voters' frustration are pointed in many different directions, not just one direction, and as low as President Obama's approval ratings have been at different points in the past months, the disapproval for the Republicans in Congress has always been substantially higher, and it's in a way that's quite relevant that when you ask people about what's wrong with politics and what's wrong with what's going on in Washington, D.C. these days, they are as likely, if not more likely, to talk about the Republicans in Congress as they are to talk about President Obama and his policies. So this is so that in that sense, this is a very different kind of cycle than the one we had in 2010. And you know, there is that the Republicans have aligned themselves, and including the not just the party, but the candidates who are running under the Republican banner this year, have aligned themselves with a series of policies that voters quite simply disapprove of. So there's a real debate to be had, and I think Democrats have shown a much greater inclination and willingness this time to join that debate in a very aggressive kind of way and not sit back and hope for the best.
And I hear you, and I agree. You know, the numbers nationally, you're seeing a lot of exactly what you're talking about and this debate and the, you know, some of the disgust with Congress in general and frustration around, some of the Republican stands. You're certainly seeing that nationally. But talk to me about the South. I mean, because in terms of the Senate control, you know, so many of these key Senate races, Kentucky, North Carolina, Georgia, Louisiana, the list goes on. I'm sure you saw the recent, I think it was New York Times Kaiser poll of Southern states that the Democratic candidates in the Democratic battle for Senate, they're not yet down in the South. But one of the main things, if not the main thing pulling them down right now, is Obama's popularity rating. It's not even so much Obamacare, but quite possibly the president himself. Is that what you're seeing? And if that is right, what can be done about it?
The numbers are what the numbers are. These are mainly red states that voted for Mitt Romney in 2012.
Yes.
That's not shocking. What's important here is that these are elections that have important known quantities other than President Obama. That in Kentucky, people have very strong feelings about Mitch McConnell. And there's a very high disapproval for Mitch McConnell. His personal favorables are quite low. My guess is that that will be as important as driving political choices there in 2014 as people's attitudes toward President Obama. In Louisiana and Arkansas, you have two incumbents who are well known on in their own right, part of political legacy that well respected in those states, and it's not that they are understood to be just kind of creatures of Obama. They have their they've developed their own personas over a long period of time, and both in Arkansas and Louisiana and North Carolina, and you can include Alaska in this, as their nominating process goes on, Louisiana has a slightly different process than the other states. The Republican candidates will become more and more in focus for voters. This is certainly true in Georgia. There's a reason why incumbents often win elections. That they have, they have actually two chances to win. Their first chance to win is to demonstrate to voters that they deserve to be reelected. But even failing that, they have a second chance to win because they can demonstrate to voters that the challenger is a less good alternative. And I think that if you go through all of the races involving incumbents, they have a very strong case to make on that first level that they deserve to be reelected. And then, given who the opponents are likely to be in each of those states, they will also have a very powerful case to make about why their opponents are not as good a choice. And are less likely to be in step with their views on issues that people really care about.
And just so I make sure I have it, are you working with any of the senators in any of these key races, or are those not any of the races that you're directly
involved in? They're not my clients. I work in some independent campaigns to support them.
Understood. Quickly, health care and lessons from the Florida race. If I'm not mistaken, I think that you worked on that very close and very hard-fought recent Florida race, Alex Sink and David Jolly. Any lessons from that, particularly around portrayal, characterization, how to run with or against health care and the Affordable Care Act, that you would advise any of these current candidates who might be in some of these battles?
Well, I think Democrats are doing the right thing right now, which is that they are, rather than kind of, being just in a defensive crouch and hoping this will go away, Democrats really around the country are leaning into the issue. They are framing a very powerful contrast between and a powerful choice between fixing and improving the Affordable Care Act or repealing it altogether. We know from polling data that voters, even voters who have reservations about the Affordable Care Act, often don't want to repeal it. They want to fix it. And that the Republican obsession with repealing the Affordable Care Act is a huge vulnerability with them. And they sometimes say, well, we'll replace it with something else. They've voted over 50 times now to repeal it, never voted to replace it. And once, and if somebody, you know, actually came up with a real plan to replace it, whatever, I am confident whatever that plan would be less appealing to voters than what we have now. So the Democrats, I think, and are leaning into it by talking about the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, and in a way that makes it clear what the cost and consequences would be if the Republicans had their way in repealing it, that people would lose the protections they have against being denied coverage or losing or denied coverage for a pre-existing condition, or losing coverage because they get sick or their medical bills get too high, that the seniors would lose some of the coverage they now have for their prescription drug coverage under Medicare, that healthcare costs would go up because the insurance companies would no longer be required to justify their rate increases and as they now have to under the Affordable Care Act, or that they would no longer be required to spend 80% or more of premiums on actual health benefits instead of CEO bonuses or bureaucratic administrative costs. So I think we have a very strong case to make on the Affordable Care Act. And the other thing to recognize about this is that this issue is, you know, while it is important, while Democrats have to engage in it, it is not the end and be all for voters. Their Republican voters say this is their number one issue. But for the rest of the electorate, they care deeply about jobs. They care deeply about having a balanced approach to dealing with the country's fiscal situation. They are worried about the protection of Medicare and Social Security and other issues related to financing a college education. But by playing to their base and talking about Obamacare, 24/7, I think Republicans are really turning off voters in the middle of the electorate who care about lots of other issues. And I just think this Republican obsession is neurotic at some level and certainly excessive, beyond to what people want to be talking about.
Yeah, as I've spoken with some other pollsters as well in these conversations, I that's exactly what I'm hearing. And on both sides, Republican pollsters as well, yes, health care, Affordable Care Act is an issue, but jobs, income, affordability, even on some level, as it adds up to inequality, but it really, some of the main issues. And I guess that's what you would be advising folks to really kind of focus on and have a balanced, balanced approach with their constituents.
Yes. I mean, well, I agree with those other pollsters.
Yeah. Okay. Just to close out then quickly, you said you've been doing this since 1978. You've seen a number of trends in multiple directions. In terms of what you do, how's digital changed your job?
It's become another research tool for us. You said how has digital changed?
Yeah.
It's become a valuable research tool. It lets us do things that we couldn't do before, and it also has created much more of an imperative for us to understand. Have a special understanding of the voters who use digital platforms as a primary source of their political information, so that campaigns can communicate with them as effectively and efficiently as possible. So it's been important. You know, I've been politics right now is actually more fun than ever before. More enjoyable for me, because the young people I'm not one of them.
No, and I'm decreasingly one of them.
So. But the young people who are working in politics today are really smart. They're really motivated. They're highly skilled. When I started, even before 1978, if you were smart and energetic, you could, do well. But now politics has become much more of a discipline. It's not just being kind of smart in general. There are things you need to know that you need to be skilled at. And, I'm just, constantly blown away by how good and thoughtful and young people in politics are. But with really kind of a high level of motivation, and this is not they're not technocrats at all. They care deeply about the outcomes of the elections. They understand the stakes, but they really come to campaigns now with real skill sets, a real sense of a professional discipline, and it makes working at campaigns a lot more fun and rewarding for me, and I'm constantly learning a lot from young people in politics. And
that is such an optimistic thing to hear. I mean, to hear anyone who has done their profession or done something for 20, 25 years, 30 years, and to hear that they're having more fun, enjoying it more today than ever before, as much today as ever before. That's an incredibly optimistic thing to say, and I would venture to guess that goes a long way to why you've been doing what you've done for so long and so effectively. Jeff Guerin, president of Heart Research Associates, has led research and virtually everything that any of us could think about. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
I'm Chris Rebeck. This is Political Wire Conversations.